Do you ever ask yourself what's preventing you from achieving your goals or what's interfering with your happiness? Then perhaps it's time to check out our sponsor, BetterHelp.com. Guys, we know the last few years have been a whirlwind of emotions, but the good news is that one, you're not alone in this, and two, there is help out there if you need it. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with their own licensed professional therapist. You can connect with them in a safe and private online environment, so it's convenient, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. This is not a self-help line. It is professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room or leave your house. They have services offered around the world, and they have professional counselors that are experts in depression, stress, anxiety, relationship issues, anger, family conflicts, and so much more. Everything that you share with them is confidential, and this is a safe, convenient, and professional way of getting help that you need. We want you to start living a happier life today. So as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/listener. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/listener.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode number 58. We are quickly approaching 60, but we're not quite there yet, of the Outlap F1 Podcast. It's time to pick up the pieces before we all go home for Christmas break. You've got Andy. I'm along with John tonight. It's just going to be the two of us. But we know that there's been a lot that's gone on since whatever Sunday the 12th was. John, have we picked up all the pieces yet?
Yeah, physically or emotionally?
Your call. Sure.
Okay. No, not entirely.
Sort of.
I've just basically had to stay off social media for the last few days, because every time I think I'm in a good spot and I'm just like ready to move on, if I just get on social media, then I'm just riled up again. I'm like, all right, I gotta hop back off there again.
Yeah, it's been one of those where I'm like, I go in, I put my foot in the thing, and I go, nope. We're gonna just hold up.
I basically just devoted my social media time to hating on the Bears. Yeah, there you go. So. That kept me focused and busy, you know, over the last, you know,
if you wanted good focused legit frustration, they're all there for you.
Yeah, it was easy picking, and you know, all the fans are aligned into the same direction, so there's really no controversies or anything. Yeah, it's a nicer place to be despite the on field results, but yeah, it's been a busy week. We were joking pre-race. I've spent multiple hours building a Power Wheels car this week for my daughter, and now a three-story dollhouse-looking thing that's going to take up half a room. I don't know, you know, what what has been purchased in my bank account, but
that's a very well-behaved kid. You know, no coal for her, man. Woo.
Yeah, well, let's hope she likes it. Let's hope it doesn't. Well, if I built it, it's probably going to fall apart in a matter of minutes. But I don't know. As soon as I opened the package and saw the number of screws, I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. This is going to be a while. So, yeah, other than that, I'm doing all right. Off work this week. So it's nice to chill out and do some things around the house.
Well, I'm still getting there. And James is actually not here because he is bringing Christmas to America. I literally do think he is doing that. So all of the stores out there that have stuff on their shelves, you can thank people like James for getting all that stuff to you on time. So he is doing the yeoman's work. This is his like insane busy time of the year. He's only got a couple days to go, so hopefully he will come up for air and maybe give us a listen and let us know what he thinks of the two-person act tonight. Unfortunately, Deanna is out. She's gotten a little bit ill going on right now. She's just got back from her vacation, so we wish her a quick recovery and all the best for our relapsed mate over there. So you can find our show on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. Please do see the link tree in our show notes. If you are happen to be watching this on YouTube, please do us the solid and click the like and subscribe button. It helps us bring more content to you. It enables this type of content to come up earlier in your feed. So we would appreciate, and that's just to help you out. You can email our show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can find our beautiful website at www.outlapf1.com. If this was your first, if this year was your, you experienced your first race, please do check out our F1 for Beginners Season 3, Episode 6. We will be refreshing that before the 2022 season kicks off. If you are considering going to a race next year, please feel free to check out our COTA Experience in Global Motorsport Survey, episode Season 3, Episode 47. As previously mentioned, please do check out Relap with Deanna. Her Abu Dhabi reaction is up. It was crazy. It's, as she would say, a great time. So please do check that out on YouTube. Super thanks again to the Outlap F1 Nation who continues to step up. We still do want to get that sign in Zandvoort. I have Fernando Alonso running over your names. That's what we're trying to do. Please do check out our link in the show notes, $1, $5, anything you'd like to give. It all goes back straight into the show. We're not taking any money out of this for sure at this point. So please feel free to donate at your leisure. And just a special thank you to everyone in the Outlap F1 Nation, whether you donate or not, for making our latest episode our most downloaded and most played episode ever in the history of the podcast, and that is by a wide margin. It wasn't even close. So thank you, everybody who checked us out. We hope you liked it. We hope we have some new fans that want to stick with us, and if you've been with us from the beginning, thank you again, as always. So that's very cool. As a reminder, if you are still looking for your last-minute Christmas gift or your after-Christmas gift that gets delivered whenever it does, please do check out the good folks at Manscaped. We continue to offer the 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP. As always, we're proud to bring that to you. And we do have a new sponsor joining the podcast for this episode, BetterHelp.com/listener. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, if you're looking for that, it's BetterHelp, HELP.com/listener. Please do check that out. We know times are tough and sometimes people struggle, and this is a way to get some quick help kind of anonymously if you're so inclined. So there was a lot of stuff. When we last left off, we were basically in shambles. We didn't really know exactly what was going on. What we've done for tonight is we kind of wanted to just pick up a timeline of what happened since you were last with us on Sunday, December the 12th. We'll go through that. We'll have John react to it. So you ready, sir?
About as ready as I can.
All right. So we'll get into it. So
reliving the
pain. Yes, exactly. Well, we'll just go through what happened. Basically, we left off with Mercedes filing their intent to appeal after the stewards rejected their on-site appeal of the decision of the lap 57 safety car mess. But essentially, there was no movement Monday or Tuesday. Everything was just kind of status quo. Moving on to Wednesday is when things actually started to happen. On Wednesday, Lewis Hamilton was formally knighted in the UK, and congratulations to him. He is now officially Sir Lewis Hamilton in the UK. And we did get our first statement from the FIA about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. They have announced a probe into the air quote safety car controversy. We do want to have some quotes that we will share here. Quote, this is from the FIA now. The circumstances surrounding the use of the safety car following the incident of driver Nicholas Latifi and the related communications between the FIA race direction team and Formula One teams have notably generated significant misunderstanding and reactions from Formula One teams, drivers, and fans. It is an argument that is currently tarnishing the image of the championship and the due celebration of the first World Drivers' Championship title won by Max Verstappen and the eighth consecutive Constructors' World Championship title won by Mercedes. It is not only Formula One that may benefit from this analysis, but also more generally, all other FIA circuit championships. And the FIA will therefore do its utmost to have this in motion with Formula One governance and will propose to the Formula One Commission to give a clear mandate for study and proposal to the Sporting Advisory Committee with the support of Formula One drivers so that any identified meaningful feedback and conclusions made before the beginning of the 2022 season can be enacted. So this is a very, very wordy statement that's basically saying they're going to now do one of their very famous probes into what happened. They will probably run back the frame by frame as they do, and we'll see what comes out of it. Now, at first blush, I understand from a lot of the reaction that I saw that everyone said, well, that's not enough. You know, we want a certain race director's head on a stick, basically. And when we didn't get that, nobody was very happy about it. But what I would tell you is, after, you know, listening and watching how this organization does do its business, this is the first step on the way to actual, if there is going to be any meaningful change that comes out of this, this is the first step in how they actually do it. Will it be enough? Time will tell, but this is at least the first step. So you got to at least give them that at least they're looking into it.
Yeah, like you said, it's a wordy way of saying we'll look into it. We're not going to admit any fault, you know. And honestly, when it all comes out and it all shakes out after we have this probe or this investigation, whatever we want to call it, I still don't think there's ever going to be any fault that's admitted. There might be some swooping changes as a result of those probes, but yeah, it's going to be one of those things that, you know, it's almost like we joke, you know, even with Mercedes launching their appeal immediately after the race or whatever, like the stewards and the bodies that be there, you know, they're not going to penalize, they're not going to throw the yellow card on themselves, you know, kind of thing. You know, they're not going to say, oh, my bad. You know, yeah, we totally jacked that up. Just scratch the race, you know, let's count back a lap and call it. It's just not, just was never going to happen. And so I think the FIA, I think the only reason it's gotten so attention is because, you know, the We Stand With Lewis, you know, went insane trending on every social media. A lot of Hollywood actors got involved in it, and just random, you know, people that actually matter, unlike me, in this world, had made their comments, most of which I don't think were Formula One fans, but happened to tune in, I think, as a lot of people for the first time ever, and saw, you know, a fun race that then just went and turned into shambles, you know, with 90 seconds to go, unfortunately. So I think that the attention that this received, I think, is it kind of forced their hand to address it, which I kind of honestly surprised they did. So I, to your point, I have to give them credit for that, because it would have been probably easier to just swoop it under the rug and say, hey, we're the FIA, we're Formula One, we're the greatest ever, you'll watch this regardless, you know, yada yada, be done with it. So it is at least interesting that they, you know, are investigating this and we'll look into it. Will I think that there's any fault that will come out of it or anything admitted? No, but I think it could lead to some changes to hopefully provide better direction in the future so that we hopefully never have this particular instance again.
Yeah. I think the easy one, or the low hanging fruit that I'm almost positive that they're going to do, just because I've heard a lot of consensus on this, is you're not going to have the team principals being able to call the FIA directly, or at least the race director directly anymore. It's going to have to get filtered, whether that's going to be a separate person that hears those arguments and then translates up, or however that's going to work. I don't yet know. But I can't imagine that we're going to continue to see people just pelting the FIA radio with lobbying like they did. I mean, even Toto Wolff came out after he broke his silence and said, look, you know, we both us and Red Bull probably took it way too far, you know, upon further review. So that's an obvious one. The other one that I would wonder if they're actually going to do is, do they split some of the duties of the race director up between, you know, flag type situations where we saw that they had, you know, some deficiencies in, and you know, just the maintenance of the race and everything, versus sporting calls that then have to get referred to the stewards. That could be something that they could do. It's from everything that I've read about the inner workings of the Michael Massey FIA stewarding room, is it's been a skeleton crew, and he's probably been stretched out way too thin. And it's not surprising that in a big moment, all that stress and all that pressure probably just breaks the back of the poor guy. And I feel bad calling him like the poor guy here, because, you know, he's really, I mean, he is what he is, but, but you know, from that, do we now see a better utilization of resources at the FIA for different things? That those are things that I think you might actually see come out of this. Do they admit fault? They may. I mean, you know, we had one of these probes. The last time one that I can remember that was significant was the Jules Bianchi incident. Was what happened and why? And it took them 6 months, and then they figured out, okay, there was a lack of communication between the people on the road and the flag people and everything else. And yes, there was a double wave yellow, but it clearly wasn't enough. And now we have virtual safety cars. And now anytime there's a piece of equipment on track, we either drop a VSC or a full SC right away. So they will probably come up with something that will hopefully prevent something from this happening again, but it's still a mess. They still got to clean it up. So we'll see where it goes.
I think you bring up a good point. I mean, one of the big criticisms of Michael Massey this year, even before Spa and before some of the other shenanigans, was the amount of time that it took him to make a decision when it came to some safety things. There was some significant, you know, not even necessarily significant necessarily in all, you know, in all situations there, but as race fans of guys, you know, like us who have watched the sport for decades now, you know, there were incidents that happened that you and I would both look at and say instantaneously safety car without question. And there was multiple times where there was weird, awkward delays where we as longtime race fans are like, okay, come on. Throw it up. Let's go. Push the damn button. Let's go. And, you know, eventually it would come, you know, most of the time. But there was an awkward period of time there where it's like there was an indecision or, to your point, someone being stretched too thin and getting, you know, conversations from multiple people and trying to look at some data and look at this and look at how much G-force was it and everything else before he, you know, makes a decision. It, you know, that shouldn't be one person's job necessarily. Obviously, you know, I don't know. We didn't get all the inner workings of Charlie's war room. So, you know, I imagine, you know, he obviously had his own style, his own people in there. We know it was ran, you know, pretty damn well for the most part. But yeah, it's something's got to give. And I think, you know, maybe splitting those duties out to have someone, you know, maybe that's him or whomever is, you know, by the book is the sporting regulations master. He knows it like the back of his hand, can recite it left and right and backwards and forwards and everything else. And then you've got someone else there that just their sole job is to look out for safety. And then, you know, obviously safety has got to override anything else. So whoever that person is has got to be able to say, you know, push a button and override everything else. Hey, this is a safety call. It doesn't matter what the hell you're saying, you know, race director, this is it. We're, you know, safety car, whatever the case may be. So yeah, I think we'll get something like that because, I mean, hopefully they look at the you know, grand scheme. You know, we got Spa, that's a whole separate issue there. But I think safety in general has got to be looked at. You know, we've had just too many. We've gotten lucky, at least in the world of Formula One. Unfortunately, in other series, not so much in the Junior Series. But, you know, Formula One's been lucky for a while now. And, you know, luck, you know, only runs so far. So safety's got to be the utmost precedent for, you know, sweeping changes here, and then sporting regs being second. But yeah, it's a lot for one person to try to take on.
Yeah. And the other thing that, I mean, I mentioned it when we recorded on Sunday, I hope they come out with some sort of a end of race chart that's just easy to follow, that, okay, you know, with this many laps to go with this type of an incident, we're going to do full safety car, or we're going to do red flag, or we're going to do VSC, or whatever they decide. As long as everybody then is clued into that, then you can't have, you know, well, we thought it was going to be this, and then it turned out, you know, we thought it was going to be X and turned out to be Y. Well, our chart said we were going to do Y. So, you know, there's your defense to all of what the, you know, all the negativity. And you're really, the thing is, when I've gone back and watched it, you're really only talking about 30 or 40 seconds. If he lets all the lap cars go 30 or 40 seconds earlier, we're not in any of this right now.
Yeah,
so
Max Verstappen still wins the championship.
More than likely.
There's still a lot of pissed off people, but they're just pissed off at just how,
I mean, but that's racing,
know,
and that's
how the cookie crumbled, you know, on that particular Sunday.
I mean, and that's the crucible of having a one race championship, or it comes down to one race. And the pressure that can happen. And that's part of the sport. Not necessarily what we saw happen in those last couple laps there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, you know, quarter mile short tracks and throughout the United States that have better end of race, you know, matrix in place to decide, okay, then we're going to, you know, NASCAR has their green, white checkered mentality and things like that. You know, I don't want to see any of that, but I agree from a sporting standpoint, you know, it should be pretty cut and dry, and there's no reason. 'Cause like I said, it's happening throughout the world. It's happening across the US and every short track, they all have their setup of, you know, how many laps left is exactly what we're going to do. You know, we're not even going to bother trying to restart this thing or whatever the case may be. Obviously nobody wants to see a race end under, you know, a safety car, but it might just be that, you know, once in a blue moon that might actually happen, and it's happened before. And, you know,
yeah, I mean, there is that weird part of even when a race does end under the safety car where they actually green flag it so that they have the winning shot, you know, of without the safety car in front of it, which everyone always gets confused on anyway. But if that's what you're going to do, then that's what you're going to do. And I don't have a problem if the FIA wants to say, hey, we're going to value finishing the race under race conditions. That's fine. But then you just backtrack all of your then decisions to that end. And that's what people would know. But you can't go into it assuming we think it's going to end like this because that's what the math tells us, versus then throw the math out the window and we just decide on our own. So
the sport had two significant black eyes this year, one being obviously Spa and obviously the finale. You know, Spa, the regular fans, the diehard fans, you know, that Spa hurts us in that capacity. But as far as outside the realm of Formula One, I don't know how many people were really tuning in, you know, to, you know, there probably wasn't a ton of brand new fans looking at Spa. You know, when you think of it on a you know, macro on
a,
scale,
on a global scale, but, or a cultural
yeah,
scale.
But yeah. Abu Dhabi. I mean,
yeah, no, this thing was covered by a lot
about
of different,
airing your own laundry, your dirty laundry.
No, I mean, there's news organizations that normally never touch Formula One that were touching this. You know, you had NBC news articles,
nothing
about
to
it.
Do with sports at all. And they're so, yeah. And like I said, you had, you know, celebrities, you had politicians, you had all kinds of people getting involved in this thing. You have no idea what F1 is before, you know, a week prior where they heard about there was a, you know, the first time in 30 something years, we've got, you know, 40 something years, we've got, you know, a tie, and people tune in. And it was, you know, it was at a decent time in the States and, you know, obviously, you know, a decent time frame throughout the world. It made for obviously beautiful, you know, ESPN had some pretty incredible numbers and things like that. And it's just a shame that a lot of people were left scratching their heads and saying, what the hell? And, you know, it's, yeah. Like I said, my boy still loses in like most scenarios that play out this out. If it plays out naturally in most ways, my boy still loses this race. But again, there's no controversy and the FIA can chalk it up and say, well, we had a hell of a good season. Thanks for tuning in. See you next year.
And we followed standard procedure is always the easy and automatic defense. And that's what they took themselves away from. So we end up taking all of this now. Okay, so now we had the we're going to look into it statement on Wednesday, and then Thursday was finally when we finally got to see some movement. The first statement coming from the wife of Toto Wolff, Miss Susie Wolff, very, very well-worded statement. I thought it broke about, I think, 3-something a.m. our time. So this is probably, I think, the best part of her entire statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but her quote, "The decision of one person within the governing body who applied a rule in such a way that has never been done before in F1 single-handedly decided the F1 Driver World Championship. Rules are rules, but they can't be changed on a whim by one individual at the end of a race." I thought that was very poignantly stated, and I think that's the macro view of, I think, a lot of fans if they actually turn around, step back, and look at what happened.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, I'm sure you've seen it. You've done this, Andy. As an American F1 fan, you probably spent most of your life, like me, defending Formula One and trying to preach Formula One to the newcomers and to get them in and, you know, oh, there's no overtaking. And, you know, we hear all this and we're always defending, you know, our love of the sport. And we finally get things some mojo. We finally get some things going in the right direction here. But you know, it's one of the big things that people criticize is the, you know, the fact that some, you know, F1 rules get changed mid-season, and that's bad enough. We saw it a few times even this year. So it's, you know, I think anytime you have a sweeping change, regardless of whether it's small or big, I don't think it should ever be done mid-season. You set the rules. Those are the rules. Be done with it. You know, it's,
yeah, you got to live with the bed that you make.
Yeah. And for better or worse, just that is what it is. You know, you can readdress it in 12 months and you change it. If it's a bad rule, you change it. But yeah, I 100% agree with her. I mean, we have our own examples. I'm trying to remember the race off the top of my head. You probably remember, but I mean, we had a race where the rules were followed by the book and we finished under safety car. And again, there was no controversy. No one cared. No one said anything about it. And even Michael Massey defended his action, saying, well, these are the rules. This is why we finished under safety car.
And we've had races.
So, I mean, I have to agree with her.
You know, like the Baku precedent that was set where we red flagged it with two to go. And even in the moment, I was almost thinking, oh, boy, this is kind of NASCAR-esque. But, you know, I said, but you know what? It's within the race distance. And how else were we going to get going again? And we had an issue of tires delaminating and popping. So, you know, together with all of that, I was like, okay, this makes sense. And then those last two laps, I mean, we all remember hearing Mark Webber screaming on the Channel 4 broadcast of that race, because that's an awesome moment. All started from that red flag decision. So, I mean, there's times and places for all of those types of things. You know, you just have to keep on to, again, as a referee, I would still be looking at what are our normal procedures, what are our agreed upon things that we all understand what's going to happen. When I make this call, does everybody know what it's going to be? Nobody knew what was going to be.
You nailed it right on the head there. There should never, whether the situation is, everyone who's in the know, all the teams, everything should know, this is what happens, exactly what Michael's going to do. You know, it sucks. You know, it might help us today, it might hurt us today. But this is exactly what's going to happen, you know, and there's no sense in arguing it because he's going to do exactly what he's supposed to do. That's how it's supposed to be. I mean, you know, we see it across all forms of sports. You know, there's the rules are there. They should be applied evenly. They aren't always. And, you know, we've seen things in sports throughout the world, you know, unfortunately, where referees have played a huge impact on the outcome of a game. But yeah, the global scale of this was pretty phenomenal, unfortunately. But yeah, I know I agree with Susie 100% on that one.
Yeah. So about an hour after Susie came out with the statement, we did finally get Mercedes ended their social media and all media blackout with the following statement. And it basically reads kind of as follows. We hereby withdraw our appeal, ran a statement from the team. Together with Lewis, we have deliberated carefully over how to respond to the events at the Formula One season finale. We appealed in the interest of sporting fairness. We have since been in a constructive dialogue with the FIA and Formula One to create clarity for the future so that all competitors know the rules under which they are racing and how they will be enforced. Thus, we welcome the decision by the FIA to install a commission to thoroughly analyze what happened in Abu Dhabi and to improve the robustness of rules, governance, and decision-making in Formula One. We also welcome that they have invited the teams and the drivers to take part. And so this now brings the end to the official end to the 2021 Drivers World Championship. The FIA gala happened about maybe 2 or 3 hours after that, notably with Toto Wolff and Lewis Hamilton not in attendance. It was also notable that the Constructors Champion Mercedes winning car, as well as their Formula E winning car, were absent from the winner's photo shoot that tends to go out with all the FIA gala and all the accoutrement associated with that. But at that FIA gala, Max Verstappen was officially crowned. He was finally handed the Drivers Championship trophy. And so ends a very long week for me as an F1 fan. I'm sure for you as an F1 fan, John. I didn't even watch the FIA gala. Normally I make it a point to, you know, if they put it on YouTube, which they did this year, to watch it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. I watched, obviously with the time difference, you know, it was still middle of the day for us. So had a lot of things going on today, but I did, you know, was in and out basically. And a lot of people were criticizing that it didn't seem to be the most exciting show on earth.
Which, no, it rarely is anyway.
Never really is. There's a reason why Kimmy got drunk.
Right. Years ago. He knows what he's doing.
But yeah, it's, I saw little bits and pieces between meetings and things like that. But yeah, it was, had a couple of comical moments, a couple of awkward moments, you know, par for the course. So it was all good. But yeah, I mean, there was, you know, like I said last week in our review, you know, I didn't think this was how Lewis was going to, I will be shocked if they actually carry through with this. I think you said the same thing. I don't think that's how Lewis would want to win a world championship in a courtroom either. You know, I think he sees this as, you know, a black eye for the sport, and there's no denying it from, I think, all parties involved. I think even Red Bull, I think in all their shenanigans that in all the smack talking that they love to do, I think even they've come out and, you know, said, hey, things, it's not exactly how things played out, you know, how they wanted it either. So, but yeah, I'm not surprised that Lewis said, hey, you know, let's just kill this thing and be done with it. There was a lot of rumors online about, you know, is the FIA negotiating some kind of secret settlement with Mercedes like they did Ferrari-esque a couple of years ago? You know, I don't know. It's it's probably unlikely there.
Yeah. I mean, that was,
I think they said, hey, we need to get some change here, and we're going to make sure we have a seat at the table. So if you want us to continue racing in your sport, you're going to have us, we're going to create a committee, and we'll be making sure that we have a giant seat there with our names on it. So
right.
It's probably the best that Mercedes could ask for, and I think the FIA would happily agree with that.
Yeah, I think they ultimately decide to withdraw because they can't win even if they win. I mean, even if they come out and they can prove that this was the wrong application of the rules, which, you know, there's some legal theories that say yes, and there's some legal theories that say no. I've seen legal scholars from both sides of this comment on it. What then, you know, the other part of the legal system, which a lot of people don't like, and it's just part of the system, is then what becomes the remedy? How do you penalize Red Bull for not doing anything wrong in that instance? And because you end up in that conundrum of, well, then what can you do? Well, you go back to lap 57. No, that doesn't work because now you're running afoul of race distance and everything else. And how does then that affect the 18 other drivers that this whole thing affected, whether they wanted it to or not? And then if you go back and say, okay, just throw the whole race out. Well, congratulations, Max Verstappen is still your driver's world champion on count back with a tie. So, I mean, they could not win this in a way that would see the championship ever change hands. I think they eventually realized that. I think they've got some great lawyers on their team. They probably exhausted every nook and cranny. They could not find anything. And I think this is ultimately why they decided, and they waited almost the full 96 hours. So they looked, and I know, like, as soon as this came out, I saw a ton of immediate reaction that, you know, they did, how dare you not go through with this? It's easy to sit back and not and spend someone else's money because lawyers ain't cheap. Yeah. And that hearing wouldn't have been cheap. And if they didn't get, you know, lost in all of this is, you actually read the steward's decision. Oh, by the way, the fee that Mercedes paid to have the protests didn't get refunded back to them. So they were out that money. So could you only imagine what a hearing would cost? They'd probably get slapped with the entire cost of the hearing on top of their lawyers, on top of probably Red Bull's lawyers. Red Bull would go after them for that.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, and that's the thing. If this would have gone forward, this would have drug out for months. I mean, this is one of those things that we could be rolling in to Bahrain next year and still this could be dragging out. And especially with in the middle of a pandemic, you know, it's not everything is a priority in this world. And it's, as much as Formula One is a big deal to us in the grand scheme of things, I don't know, you know, if it's number one priority. And when you start getting into, you know, obviously there's motorsports, legal systems and everything else involved, but still, this is just something that it's probably going to go, would have gone for months on end and tens of millions of dollars and pounds later, you know, we still probably end up with the same result. And then you risk, you know, as if you're Mercedes, you know, you risk it. At what point does the court of public opinion start to turn on you? You know, there's always that fine line there between like having everyone having your back. You know, right now, you know, they're at least they won one thing. I mean, you know, obviously they won the constructor championship, which is what pays all the money, by the way. You know, but and they also have, you know, the you know, court of public opinion coming into next season. You know, I think a lot of people that traditionally are anti-Lewis, anti-Mercedes are like, hell yeah, make sure that boy has the fastest car on earth. Like, redemption for Lewis, you know. So they've gained a lot in that. While they lost a lot, they also gained a lot in different ways. So it's all for the best, unfortunately, to not drag that out, because, yeah, there's no winning that battle. So,
yeah. So end it. Like we said, we had the gala, we had Max get crowned the champion, and then we had an FIA election because John Tott did step down. He did retire, and we have a new FIA president. And as expected, Mohammed Ben Sulayhem was elected the new president of the FIA. He is, a little bit of background on him, he's a 14-time FIA Middle East Rally champion, having competed from 1983 to 2002. He's had a number of roles within the FIA, most recently being a member of the World Motorsport Council. So they're the ones who approve all the calendars. And when rule changes go through, there's that committee that they always come out with. They say, we have agreed to it. And then 2 months later, oh, yeah, by the way, the World Motorsport Council met and we've agreed. And now it's actually official. He's a part of that, was that committee that would vote yay or nay on those types of things. He will now fulfill a 4-year term as the head of Formula One's governing body. The FIA also, you know, oversees Formula E, World Rallycross, World Rally Championships, those types of things. So any FIA-accredited event, he is now the president of all of that. It was noted that he kind of ran on a campaign of change. His opponent was a BRDC member, British Racing Drivers by the name of Graham Stoker. And Graham Stoker was basically seen as John Tott's handpicked sort of replacement. So this is kind of a bit of an election of change. So he's vowed to take motorsport. He wants to double motorsport's participation. He does want to see more women involved in motorsport. He wants to also put best practice governance structures in place and strengthen both diversity and inclusion within the motorsport community. So at first blush, I think this is a good move.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly talking the talk. So if he can walk the walk and accomplish even, you know, some of these things, then he'll, you know, the sport will be better off for it. So, yeah, I like the fact that, you know, he's a racer. You know, he's got that in his blood. So I think that's a good thing. You always want to have that and just kind of have racer's mentality. You know, hopefully that'll help guide, you know, future decision making on racing moves and what's fair and what's not fair and et cetera, et cetera. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a healthy push for diversity, inclusion, have more women in racing. I think those are all things. And I hope that he backs those things up because, you know, the more people we have talking about the sport, the more people who are growing up watching this, you know, from every background on planet Earth, it's not only good for the sport, but I mean, it's good for a whole. So there's no reason if you're basically the front man of Formula One, there's no reason why you would ever not want any of those things to come to fruition because, you know, not only, like I said, it's better for all people involved, but it's certainly better for your bottom line and, you know, Liberty Media and the financial piece of it as well to have, you know, more eyes on the sport. So, yeah, I think it's, like I said, on paper, like you said, it all looks good. And I hope that, you know, he's able to fulfill a lot of those things. So,
yeah, I mean, we shall see, you know, kind of where this goes. Obviously, I hope, if nothing else, that he has a more active role in specifically with Formula One than John Tott decided or chose to, because this way you actually have, you know, support of your race director or, you know, there's another avenue with which to, you know, bring legitimate concerns up to. John Tott really just stepped back and lets Charlie Whiting when he was around and then Michael Massey kind of run that show. I hope that this is a start of change because, you know, he was John Tott was probably the last of what I would say the old guard connected to Formula One, you know, the Bernie era, the Flavio Briatore era, and those types of people. I mean, if John Tott wants to go back to Ferrari, I wish him nothing but the best. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Didn't know that I particularly loved him as the president of the FIA, so I hope this is a good move.
Yeah, I mean, this is a changing world that we're in. It's a changing sport that we're in. So I think it makes sense to, you know, to bring in someone with fresh ideas and, you know, a new vantage point, new set of eyes on issues at hand. And yeah, I agree. I think hopefully him being hands-on, and hopefully that's the case. Maybe if he wants to win a lot of fans over, the first thing he can do is, you know, replace Michael Massey. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But we'll see. You know, he may have his own individual that he wants to bring in. So yeah, there's a lot of opportunities
absolutely.
For him to make some change pretty quickly. So
speaking of that World Motorsport Council, we did get in a bit of other news. So that's kind of the end of the timeline. That was basically the last of it. That all happens Thursday. And then we actually got down to the business of trying to, you know, reset and move forward here. One of the bigger stories that did come out since we've last been with you was we did get confirmation of the 2026 engine regulations. Those have been approved by that World Motorsport Council. So as we've, I think, previously even said, the current 1.6 liter V6 engine will be kept. The electrical power will increase to 350 kilowatts. Which is 470 brake horsepower from the hybrid. The MGUH will be gone, and there will be a cost cap for engine development. The FIA has also outlined a concept of F1 running on 100% sustainable fuel. We've talked about this before, too, alongside with the increased electrical power boost. A key element is to ensure that the power units do remain attractive to fans in terms of sound. And the FIA has also clarified this, and again, this is now regulation. They want a powerful and high-revving power unit, car performance sound, driver's ability to race, avoiding excessive differentiation. So they do want engine parity. John, are we happy with this?
Yeah, 100%. I think this is a huge win. The MGUH has been a controversial and problematic component of this is engine for quite a few years now.
Ask Honda about the fun of the MGUH. Honda's
worst nightmare. It's there's people in Japan that are still having daily nightmares about the MGUH. Thankfully for them, their airline component of Honda, you know, was able to get that sorted out from everything I've ever read. Because that thing, you know, would spin at ridiculously high speeds and it was quite problematic. And you know, based on reliability issues, they'd have to constantly turn down the engine and they were still blowing up and it was just a hot mess. So, and the other thing is, you know, I don't know if there's an MGUH on any road car in the world. I'm not sure.
It's a lot of rattling to go on in a road car.
Yeah, exactly. You want to make sure you got a good warranty and maybe buy an extended warranty if you're buying that car, because it's going to be having some problems. So no, I think in the end game though, this is a huge win. I think hybrids, I think this is the best that the Formula One can do. I still think in the world of daily driving, I still think hybrids are a dying breed. But if you throw in hybrids and then you add in sustainable fuels, that could actually be a very, very winning combination for not only Formula One, but also for the world in general. So when I was doing a lot of reading about the sustainable fuel, they're saying that it should, in theory, if they can do everything that they think it could do, it should reduce the emissions by like over 60% over the current. So if you can apply a fuel that, you know, obviously there's a huge push for electric vehicles in the world, a lot of, manufacturers and even, you know, some large portions of the world from a political standpoint have said, hey, you know, by 2030 or whatever, you know, we're only going to allow electric vehicles in our countries. If you can create, but the problem is, you still have hundreds of millions of, you know, petrol burning, diesel burning cars and trucks on the world, you know, that are going to continue to run for years and years and years. So if you can develop a fuel that is cost efficient and can reduce emissions by 60-something%, I mean, that's a huge win for sustainability. It's a huge win, like I said, for Formula One and for the world in general. When you talk about climate change and everything else, I mean, that's a massive win to be able to keep your gas-fired car that you love so much, and be able to burn fuel that's cheaper and burn fuel that's a hell of a lot better, you know, for future generations. So I think that's a massive win. I think the other thing too that they called out here, which is a massive win for me. I mean, well, obviously 350 kilowatts, that's nothing to shake at. You know, I'm an EV guy, so I love hearing about that. More power is more power. I don't care where it comes from. But the high revving engines, you know, that's something that's a major, major miss that we've had for since 2014. A lot of fans have never, ever gotten to experience those ear piercing, ear bleeding Formula One sound. And every fan should be able to do that. I think it's crazy when you can go to a Formula One race and not even have to wear, you know, headphones or earplugs or anything else. And you can have a conversation with the person next to you the entire race. Like it's nothing. That should not be the case for a Formula One car. So if you're burning a whole lot less fuel because you've got much more electric energy that's producing power and providing more power, and the fuel that you are burning is substantially more efficient and, you know, less emissions, then there's no reason why you can't peg that thing to 20,000 RPMs and let it scream. So I guarantee you, yes, a 1.6 liter V6 will hybrid at that will sound very much different than a screaming V8. But I guarantee you there will not be very many people that will complain about a 20,000 RPM screaming 1.6 liter V6 either. So give us, well, the fans want it. It's been every survey that's come out since the beginning of time, since the hybrid era, has been complaining about the exhaust sound and how quiet they are. Every fan out there wants it. And this exactly puts us at a point. We can get high revving engines and we can still, you know, go on to Formula One's greater calls. One of the biggest calls they have is bring in more manufacturers, because manufacturers want technology that they can put into their road cars. This combination of fuel and hybrid components, you can absolutely put in your road car and be successful and sell a shit ton of cars. So I think it's a huge, huge win for the sport. And like I said, for the world as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, just pull up the YouTube video of Fernando Alonso screaming around in that old Renault from last year. And you'll hear exactly what we're talking about, and watch the reaction of the different drivers as they're getting interviewed in the media pen when they hear that thing go by. Like they all just perked up and they go, whoa, what was this? So, I mean, it's a huge part of the experience of it. It's something I have missed since 2013. I felt fortunate that at least I got to go see them twice before they got rid of them entirely. But it was a completely different experience from 13 to 14 in what you brought in terms of ear protection and what you could and couldn't do in the stands. I'll give up having the conversation with the dude next to me if it means that I can have my screaming engines back.
We'll just buy the little headset that has the mic, and we can still we'll talk to each other and still have ear-piercing F1 cars.
We'll get that 5G wireless thing at COTA finally figured out.
There you go.
We'll
see, it's a win-win. But no, this is a massive benefit, and you know, obviously the next piece there is the manufacturers and you know the potential for growth there is enormous.
Yeah,
so I don't know if you want to cover
that. Good segue right into our next story. So upon hearing the news of these 2026 engine regulations, Audi has informed the FIA that it intends to confirm an F1 entry in 2022. Now that is horrifically vague. And when you dig into what they actually said, there's not a whole lot of clarity here. So we don't know, is this one just an engine supply? Do they just want to build engines? Two, do they want to come in with a works team? And if they do want to come in with a works team, is this one, a new F1 entry, which would give us 11 teams versus the 10 now? Or would they, two, potentially go and try to take over an already existing entry? Because we do know that there are some teams that have been hurting financially. So a lot still to be determined. There's a lot TBD here. But it's interesting that, you know, we finally get some clarity on the engines and at least one new manufacturer wants to step up. So I think that's a little bit of good news.
Yeah, we'd heard, you know, Porsche and Audi were the two, I guess, front runners, obviously both of them owned by a Volkswagen group. So, you know, you've got a hell of a plethora of amazing racing heritage automobiles that fall under the Volkswagen heritage, you know, platform there. So, you know, it does appear that Volkswagen is interested in, and again, as the, you know, I still believe I've seen the stat recently, but I think they still sell as a automotive group more cars than anyone on earth. So, you know, if you can get one or maybe two of your brands potentially in there, both of them with very prominent racing heritages, I think this is a huge win. Yeah, I hope this is not just a slap an Audi sticker on a car and call it a day thing. I hope at minimum, you know, it's an engine supply. But I mean, obviously the dream goal here would be to have an 11th or potentially even a 12th team. We certainly have enough drivers out there that are talented that, you know, need a spot. I mean, hell, we got a dominant F2 champion who's sitting on the couch next year with nowhere to go. So there's clearly drivers that can fill these spots. We know Volkswagen, although they were hurt obviously severely with the Dieselgate situation and everything else that came with that. And they're still paying, you know, the long-term impacts of that, especially in the United States and things like that with all their settlements there. But from a financial standpoint, this is something that, you know, Volkswagen is still doing all right for themselves and has the resources to invest. And like I said, they're, you know, Audi and Porsche would both of them be incredible to have on the grid. And who knows, maybe they work together. You know, we talk about, you know, Ferrari and Haas and Alfa and obviously Red Bull and AlphaTauri. And, you know, maybe they have a kind of cohesion set up there and collaborate with each other, both of them running, you know, Audi engines or whatever the case may be. And kind of, you know, utilize the cost caps and the new regs to further benefit and have success. So if Audi is going to come into the sport, you can almost be guaranteed. I mean, they're going to throw everything at it. If they're fully committed, they're going to throw everything they have at this, to be, you know, hopefully a champion one day. So that's only a good thing for the sport.
Yeah. I mean, their WEC entries were always near the sharp end of the grid. So this is not an organization that does things lightly. I would personally agree. And I would say, I hope that it's a new F1 entry, a fresh F1 entry. So we would have 11 versus 10 teams on the grid. At least then, you know, you've got some competition at the front and then the back of the grid, because, you know, one team's not going to get any prize money. So there's motivation to develop and spend money. Gunther and Haas, I'm looking at you when I mention that. So you can't do what they did, which is just kind of sacrifice a year, you know, for the good of the future. But yeah, we'll have to see where this goes. I mean, again, they just said intend to confirm. They have not confirmed anything, but we will keep our eyes on it. Again, watch our Twitter. If anything breaks, we will pass it on to you. Last story before we do take a quick break, and then we'll get into a couple other stories and then some listener questions. Mick Schumacher and Antonio Giovinazzi have now signed reserve driver deals with Scuderia Ferrari. John, this is the natural progression for your Mick Schumacher theory. The Schumacher signs grid is one step closer, I would say.
Yep, it's the pieces are starting. It's a shame that James isn't out here to give me crap about it. But yeah, I mean, I've said it for a long time. I think a Schumacher science pairing would be quite successful and quite popular. And you know, we talked about last week with Vincenzo about, you know, obviously he's a diehard Scuderia fan. You know, first generation over here from his parents from Italy, so he's got everything at stake with Ferrari. And even, you know, he said and agreed with me that he thinks Sainz should be the number one guy there. And there's a lot of inter-political things going on at Ferrari. So who knows how that'll all shake out. They've invested a lot in that and you know, probably made a lot of enemies, you know, internally to make that happen. So I don't know if it's going to happen overnight or anything, but it's certainly interesting that they obviously see that the guy has talent. You know, you can't fault him for being in a Haas car that's not being developed, but for the most part he dominated his teammate, and I think he learned a lot. You know, he made some silly mistakes in Formula 2, but obviously came back and you know, won a championship there, and you know, the guy's got talent. So I think it's just a natural progression of what could be. Hopefully, if you're a Ferrari fan, and hopefully for anyone really, hopefully this isn't something that has to be used, because obviously this would only occur if, you know, one of the drivers were unable to race.
Yeah, I mean,
via injury or COVID.
I did want to clarify that he's still going to be racing with Haas. Just in case he's the second reserve driver. So obviously, if one of the Ferrari drivers couldn't go, Giovinazzi is the natural candidate. If both of them were out in the same weekend, That would be when you would see both potentially Schumacher and Giovinazzi driving for Ferrari, at which point then Haas, I would assume, then would call up Enzo Fittipaldi, assuming that he's healthy again and able to do that. Or, you know, they would have to go find another reserve driver for them, you know, to possibly take over, obviously, Mick's seat. But, yeah, Mick will still be driving with Haas next season. But this is another progression into the ladder. We do know that he's, you know, his father has had great ties with Ferrari. We're hearing John Tott going back to Ferrari to consult. Maybe that has something to do with all of this. You never know. I still personally think, I don't think they're walking away from Charles Leclerc anytime soon, but it's going to get more interesting the farther down this goes. And there is going to have to be a decision that's going to have to be made at some point. So we'll see how that all goes.
Yeah. And obviously Giovinazzi has, you know, he's going to have a full schedule next year with Formula E and, you know, between testing and all the races, although the races are pretty spread out. I actually haven't seen the updated calendar yet, so I don't know if I can't 100% say it's as spread out as it typically is, but I assume if it's anything like the last however many years now, it's been quite spread
out.
It's
going to go back to the F2 and F3 are going to go back to the kind of their combined weekends, mainly in Europe again.
So, yeah. So things will be most likely, you know, Giovinazzi would be the first call there, but it is nice that, you know, it's good that they've signed Mick for that deal. And again, and we saw a lot of weird things happen in 2021. Unfortunately, we may see a lot of weird things happen in 2022. So it's good to have the kind of those succession plans set up and be there if you need them. So,
yeah, definitely. So we're going to take a quick break. We do have a couple of further stories and we do have some listener questions we want to get to, but we're up against it, at least on timing. So we will take a quick break, pay a couple bills, and come on back and get into the rest of it.
Attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston, do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like they're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, 20% off, free shipping. Let's get back to it.
All right, welcome back. This is Season 3, Episode 58 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast. We are picking up the pieces left over in the 2021 season, and we're also taking some listener questions. But before we get into some of those listener questions, we had one or a couple more stories we wanted to touch on. One, very quickly, we did want to make note that McLaren's Pato O'Ward did complete a successful tire test in the McLaren. He was in Lando Norris's car. So he did get payment of his wager with Zach Brown for winning a race in the IndyCar series. So congratulations to Pato O'Ward. Looked like he was having a heck of a time, kid in a candy store type stuff. So way to go. Now McLaren has maybe a potential driver issue later on down the road because he looks young and hungry and certainly ready to go.
Yeah, and quick too. So,
and last story before we move on to our listener questions. If you've been with us since the Spa, whatever that was, the two-lap event that turned out to be the Belgian Grand Prix, we were told that they were going to, the circuit promoter was going to make some sort of reparations to all the fans who were very wet and very unsatisfied with, I'm sure, the two laps of running that they saw. And they've come out with an offer. I don't know that you would call this reparations. I like what you've got in the show doc here, but John, take it away.
Yeah. Obviously a lot of drivers. I think Lewis Hamilton was probably the biggest one out there calling for a full repayment. Cause again, it's not only the cost of, you know, the actual race tickets, which Spa is not cheap. I've looked into it myself, but you also got to fly over there. There's also really no place to stay in Stavelot, so you've got to, you know, stay elsewhere, and hotels get very expensive. There's not a whole lot around there, not a whole lot of much going on there. You know, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere, which is what makes Spa so special. You know, it's just, it's a cool place to be. So there was a lot of, you know, push for a repayment. or a full refund for these, you know, 200,000 plus people that were there in attendance who saw nothing, unfortunately. So the offer, if you want to call it this, it's something else. It's, they have offered, each person, in attendance will receive, an F1 TV pass. I assume that would be for the 2022 season. So that's, what, $70, $60 for the season. Okay. So we're, you know, 1/9 of the way towards covering our costs here. They will receive a free personal invitation to an exclusive event on the Thursday before next year's race. Content subject to the evolution of health situation. So that could obviously get canceled.
That sounds like a track walk.
Probably
on media day or something like that. And
yeah, you're going to get to stand together and there'll be a stage, maybe a couple interviews and you can walk around the track. Yep. And then there will also be an entry into a prize draw, offering a unique chance to win passes to the Formula One Belgian Grand Prix for 2022.
It's a chance and, for a chance.
Yeah. And then it kind of goes, you know, down the order, 100 silver grandstand seats for bronze, third place. There's 50 gold grandstand seats for silver ticket holders for Sunday or the weekend, and then 20 VIP seats for gold ticket holders for Sunday or the weekend. It's a farce.
It's a far cry from, you know, just give them their money back, at least the Sunday ticket holders.
Again, you know, there's no way they're ever going to get their money back for the airfare and hotel, like, and all. Again, you can't penalize other companies who did the right thing. It's not their fault that F1 kicked themselves in the balls for the first of two major times in 2021. But yeah, the least you could do is, you know, just refund them down to the penny what they paid for.
At a minimum, or give them 50% even. Yeah. You know, I would be okay with that, you know.
Yeah. You know, here's 50% off and here's a ticket to next year's race, you know? You know, you're still going to make a crap ton of money with concessions and parking and, you know, whatever else. And there's a lot of other ways that the track promoters can make money. You know, and you'll make happy people, they'll continue to come back. I think now you've just royally pissed people off. So between that and Michael Massey, there's a lot of pissed off people right now.
Yeah, it's a little warm on the F1 social media right now. So, yeah, I mean, if you were a ticket holder and you were, you know, disproportionately disadvantaged by this, you know, I feel for you. You know, as a survivor of the 2015 wet weekend at Circuit of the Americas, I will never forget drying my socks off with the hotel dryer, praying to God that my shoes could get dry because I had to turn around and try to go, you know, the next day after spending it for a qualifying session that never happened. And then I left the track too early. And I know Bernie Ecclestone actually opened up the pit lane and let at least people go and get really close to the cars. My idiot self left, called it after they said the qualifying wasn't going to happen. So, you know, it was just, yeah. So I feel the pain. I know this. So, you know, I hope the lucky people win and feel better about it, but that's just, it's not enough for what happened.
Yeah, that was me in 2017 in Monza, that qualifying. It's probably the most wet and cold that I've been in a long time.
There were just places
literally sitting on a metal grandstand shivering.
There's places on clothing I didn't know water could go, and it went there. So enough.
Yep. I remember Will Buxton replying to a tweet that I had that weekend, and he was like, bring your wellies. And at that point I was like, hang on, what's a welly? You know, and of course I'm already in Italy, so I'm like, oh, this is bad. Like, well, you know, we'll just toss this pair of shoes out. Just, you know, it's sacrificial, you know, shoes at this point, cause there's no getting that back. But yeah, then you got to come back the next day and you know, try to be dry. So it was interesting, but yeah, so I feel the pain. But at least I got a show that day. So despite it being cold and freezing, I got to qualify
the next day. So, I mean, at least they did run it.
Yeah. At least we got something.
And it
out
was a heck of a race, and it was probably the most fun. That was the Rosberg throw the hat at Hamilton and when he won the championship year. So, you know, so I got my money's worth at the end of it. So I don't feel cheated, at least in that respect, but I do feel the pain of going to an event and then not having it happen.
So. Yeah.
All right, so turning the page from the news. Now, we did hear a lot from you, the listener. So, John, if you want to tee some of these up, and we'll get into our listener questions.
Yeah, so the first one we had is from The Formula. I'd like to hear you discuss the Audi confirming their entry into Formula One, which we've done so now, so thank you for that. And then possibly discuss how the effect of the cost cap and wind tunnel regulations will be pertaining to the 2022 cars and beyond. So, Andy, what's your thoughts on that?
So, the wind tunnel is probably the first foray that F1's ever had into trying to normalize performance based on last year's results. So, if you were in the back of the championship this year, you would have more wind tunnel testing available for you next year. And conversely, if you're at the sharp end of the grid, if you're Mercedes or Red Bull, you're going to have less wind tunnel testing going into 22 and in the future. So it's kind of like a bit of like the NFL or NBA draft, where the worst teams get the better players in an attempt, I can talk, to try to level the playing field somewhat. So that is what I think the wind tunnel is designed to do. The cost cap is basically going to be, okay, you can spend X amount of dollars on Formula One. It's a hard cap. You go over it. There are some severe penalties associated with it. So you have to be very, very strategic and precise about where you are spending your development dollars moving forward. So we had it actually in place for this last season. However, you could spend moving into this season up until they actually made it effective. So 22 is really the first year where we're going to have this hard cap that everybody spent the same coming into it with new regulations and all that. So that's why we kept saying we don't know exactly what's going to happen in 22, because you can see some surprises, because we don't know. We've never been here before.
Yeah, the sliding scale is interesting. When you look at the numbers, we obviously, this was implemented for 2021, and then in the grant, you know, in the push for cost efficiencies and stuff like that, the amount of wind tunnel testing has been slashed again for 2022. I think 22 to 25 is the last that I read. That would be kind of this new thing. So yeah, the first place team is getting, I guess, what would they consider 70% of the allowance, but then that drops, you know, pretty much basically 5% back to back to back to back to back all the way down the grid. So then your 10th place team is actually getting 115% of the allowance. So what that equates to based on the allotment for 2022 and over the next few years, is that the first place team, being Mercedes this year, because they won the Constructors' Championship, would be able to get 28 wind tunnel runs per week. Whereas on the opposite end of the spectrum, your 10th place team would get, I think it's 45 runs per week. So this doesn't sound like a substantial, you know, difference, but when you add that up over the course of a year, that's a lot of additional running that either, you know, obviously one team is getting and another team is not. So it is 5% increments, you know, from first, second, third, fourth, you know, all the way down the order, where obviously the worse the team was, the better. You know, there was a lot of people were, you know, there was some interesting comments about like, you know, is like McLaren throwing in the last, you know, couple of races here to, you know, gain themselves some additional wind tunnel time and things like that. I think things just weren't exactly working out, but it is interesting though, that, you know, you could have a team kind of, you know, throw a couple of races there at the end and say, hey, you know, let's look at this financially speaking, how much are we actually going to lose? If we drop down an order, we're going to gain a lot more wind tunnel, and kind of doing that math. It does make for an interesting dynamic, but yeah, I mean, they're supposedly will be very, very tight auditing of this process from a cost cap and from a wind tunnel perspective. And the punishments will be severe if broken. But who knows? I'm sure someone will try something because they normally do.
Well, that is, yeah, that's kind of, there's
some kind of gray
right
in there that someone will try to exploit. But yeah, so, you know, it's, if you're a team like a Haas or something like that, like we mentioned earlier, who supposedly has, you know, they didn't spend a dollar on 2021 development. It's all 100% of their development is going to 2022, you know, as a worst place team, you know, they again yet another year are getting the absolute maximum wind tunnel time possible. You know, it's it you know, on paper, it should bring us all together. We've seen it in other forms of racing. I'm not always a huge fan of it, but you know, if it makes for tighter racing and, you know, at least gets the pack together, you know, hopefully it'll be a good thing in the long run.
It's a step. I mean, we don't know exactly how significant of a step it's going to be until we actually see how it all kind of plays out. But I think it's a step. It's at least an acknowledgement of we can't just let the bigger teams continue to develop. We can't have Ferrari with an entire aerodynamic team devoted to the driver's mirror. That was getting a little bit ridiculous. And the same thing with Mercedes and the same thing with Red Bull. All those teams were just outspending and outdeveloping everybody so bad to the point where you had to do something. Otherwise, there's no motivation for a team. I mean, one of the better stories of this year, I thought, was Williams and scoring 23 points when nobody thought that that was even going to be possible. So, you know, if they can have a moment, obviously we would prefer something not like Spa where you're getting a P2 for showing up and lining up on the grid, but that qualifying effort was legitimate. So, I mean, give it to him for that because, you know, that was a great moment.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you had teams that were running their wind tunnels all day long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. They had teams in there running wind tunnels. Some teams even had multiple wind tunnels. And we're spending just millions of dollars.
Here's how the worst of it was. I mean, we have the Friday engines and then the Saturday engines go in. They used to have qualifying engines that would do 60 miles and that's it. They'd swap them out. They'd go in for that 1 hour session and that was it.
Yep. Those were different times for sure. Yep. So, it's now the thing is that, F1 really hasn't done a whole lot to, I guess, contain necessarily is obviously computer simulations is a huge deal from both an aero standpoint, but also setup standpoint and things like that. There's a lot of things you can do on computer now that you don't necessarily need an actual wind tunnel for. A lot of things you can at least get your basis out of the way and then prove it in the wind tunnel. So your big teams are obviously still going to have a competitive advantage on there. But again, there is a cost cap and running a supercomputer is quite damn expensive. It all comes down to how much money do you really want to spend? And really it's going to be a fine line there because, you know, not only is wind tunnel reducing, but also cost cap is reducing as well. Now it will actually be higher. If we actually get 25 races, it will be higher than the reported, $140 million, I think it is, because that's based on the 22 race calendar.
Yeah.
So we'll be scaled up based on that. It was scaled up again this year because we had obviously more. I can't remember if it's 21 or 22, but one of the two. So it will be scaled up, three or four races, depending on how many we actually get. Again, it's being slashed again and we'll continue to slash down. So computers cost a lot of money. It's going to be that fine balance there. I still think the higher teams are going to have a competitive advantage, but again, wind tunnel is still crucial to kind of, proving things out before you get out on the track. So. Yeah, appreciate the question. That's a good one. And we'll be discussing all this in much more insane detail for our F1 for Beginners. Oh, yeah.
And then as we get into testing and ramping up for next season, we'll start to see
a lot to break down this year with new cars.
Definitely. Yeah. So Yank Talking Smack, hello and welcome to the show, writes, would you guys be able to talk about how you think the regulations would hit the teams in the lower part of the grid, i.e. Haas, Williams, Alfa Romeo, for example? Everyone talks about how it'll hit Mercedes, Red Bull, and Ferrari, but not necessarily the lower teams. So my initial thought on the 2022 regs for the new teams is it's an opportunity. It's a massive opportunity. It's probably the best opportunity that these teams have had in over a decade to make some hay. The next Adrian Newey aerodynamic genius is out there somewhere. And a lot of these teams have probably gone young and hungry. So who's going to be the one that comes up with something innovative and new that somebody else isn't necessarily thought of yet? And now here's the opportunity to actually be able to not only have the idea, but to develop it and get it on the car. Where before, a lot of these guys, when they get just soaked up by these bigger teams, young guy gets a new and great idea. Oh, congratulations. He's the third aerodynamicist in Ferrari now. Because it's Ferrari, and that's what they do, or McLaren or Mercedes or whatever the big teams were at the time. So I think it's a massive opportunity for these teams to really make some hay, come out strong. You could see now we've been dogging Haas all year. Haas has got their Ferrari dude in the back pocket that they haven't even deployed yet in Simone Resta, who's been working on nothing but the 2022 car since he was hired there. So what's that effect going to be? That could be a huge thing. Williams getting the infusion of money from Doralton Capital are going to be spending hopefully close to the top end of the cost cap for the first time in forever. So what does that do? And Alfa Romeo getting some sponsorship dollars from them, you know, continuing to be involved in the sport. The Ferrari connection, does that flow down? Does that new power unit that Ferrari's been, you know, developing for their main team flow down to these other teams too? So I think massive opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Haas, you know, Haas is one of the ones that I think benefited from the cost cap, because to your point, you know, there was some Ferrari personnel that were strategically moved over to Haas to stay employed. Still wink, wink, you know, still a Ferrari guy, but hey, you get a Haas shirt on this for this year. But yeah, I mean, that relationship seems to be building strongly. And again, the cost cap kind of forced, I think, Ferrari's hand in some of that regard, because they wanted to keep these people employed and had to put them somewhere. So, hey, why not? But yeah, I think one of these lower teams, I feel like is going to hit it on the head. You know, I don't know if they're going to go out there and win a Constructors' Championship or anything, but I think at least one of these three teams is going to be competitive next year and is going to say, oh, wow, you know, they're going to be in the mix. They're going to be fighting heavily in that midfield battle. Maybe you're going to grab a couple of race wins from time to time if something crazy happens like we saw in 2021. I don't doubt for a second there that at least one of these teams, and Haas certainly could be that team that, I mean, yeah, they showed up, you know, on the grid in Australia a few years back and shocked the world. So, you know, they've used their relationship strategically with Ferrari then. And I think if they do that now, they benefit from the cost cap, they benefit from additional wind tunnels and things like that. You know, everything's primed for one of these teams to step up. And so there's no excuses really not to, because they're all got funding now. And they've all got kind of a level playing field from a rules and, you know, sporting regulation standpoint. So now's the time. I agree with Andy.
Yeah. And we will have to see how this plays out. And that's why we're going to watch it in 2022 for sure.
So Peter on poll has the next one. He says, hi guys. Hope you're doing well. Love the podcast. Appreciate that. Questions for the show tonight. So Andy, who's the greatest F1 driver in your opinion, without a title in the grid and in seasons past?
Oh boy.
So current grid. That's a loaded one.
Current grid. Like, who I think is the best to not basically be in contention.
To not win a title.
Yeah, I would probably go.
Who's not won a title yet.
I think I would probably go Sergio Perez, just because of the length of his career. Dude's had many opportunities, never really gotten in with a top team until now. And, you know, now he's the Red Bull second driver, as was evidenced in the last race. driver all time without a title. Oh, boy. You know, who's your...
There's a lot of names.
I mean, I'm thinking of guys like Eddie Irvine or Felipe Massa, guys who got so unbearably close, and a lot of these are second-seat Ferrari guys, and just could never get it across the finish line. I think those would be my two immediate ones. I'm sure there's a better answer, but those are mine.
Yeah, no, those are good. I forgot about Massa, but no, that's a good one. Yeah, I guess current grid for me... I agree. I think Perez is an easy one. The other guy who we talked about earlier, who I've been kind of tooting his horn for a while, even though he's on the wrong team, Sainz. I still think, you know, he's got the most points of any driver without a win in F1 history now. So I think that, you know, his day may very well be coming at some point. But yeah, I would certainly put him in that equation as well with Checo. And then if I look back, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the Rudimans out there. I think statistically, Stirling Moss would be with the most wins without a championship. But, you know, the Coulthards, the Mark Webber was insanely talented and, you know, pushing Vettel throughout that, you know, that could have easily gone his way in with a few different decisions and a couple of different race results. But It's hard to put one. When I first did the question, I think Rudiman was the one that I guess immediately came to mind. I wish Dana was on the night because I'm sure she'd have some awesome opinions from her time, you know, watching old races. But yeah, hopefully I did her proud with that one. I know she's a big fan. So the next question is the circuit that you hate the most, Andy. I guess we'll go current calendar.
Yeah, current calendar. I mean, well, I'll be honest. If you would have asked me prior to 2021, I would have had some definite ones. And then these tracks tended to produce some really good racing this year. Probably Paul Ricard still is up there. Paul Ricard or Spain or Circuit de Catalunya in terms of a race. They're great test tracks, but they're not good for current racing, especially with these aero packages.
Yeah. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this one, but if you look at, I kind of feel this way, but I kind of don't, but like the first one that pops in my head is Monaco. Like I love Monaco for the event, for the spectacle, for, you know, the prestige and the glamour and the glitz and everything else. But the racing nowadays is just,
oh, the current cars are terrible,
damn
for
bad.
It.
It's, you know, and I look back and even racing when I started in the Formula One, was just so much better at that track with the smaller cars, shorter cars, leaner cars. You could actually do a little bit of overtaking from time to time. In the current package, yeah, it's just...
Yeah, when they went to the bigger bodies in 2017, that did really kill Monaco.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, the race is on Saturday, and now everybody knows it. But, you know, you hope, with the smaller cars...
So, I mean, I'll get a lot of hate for that, and I'm an old school fan, and, you know, I want Monaco to be amazing. We talked about a week or so ago, like, I'd love for that to be a throwback livery weekend and things like that. So, I want it to be there, and I want it to belong, but... And I hate Spain, and I hate, Paul Ricard as well. They're both usually pretty terrible tracks. But if I look at just something that gets so much attention and it's such a letdown on that Sunday, I'm probably going to say Monaco. So I can't wait for the hate mail to come in on that one. And then the last question is, what's the number one thing that you've been shocked about, good and bad, since you started, producing content for Outlap?
Shock to the good. I think just in general, the relative acceptance that I think our content gets. I'm always just surprised that, when we tend to get a new fan, we tend to keep that new fan. So that's always, I think, a credit to us and to how we go about doing it. So that's always shocking because I know a lot of times with content, I'm sometimes one and done. But it's nice that the people who come to us have stuck with it. So that's to the good. The thing to the bad, how interesting some of the editing is on the back end, and sometimes what you have to do to rescue certain things when the computer gives you not what you expected. When you do the same procedure every time and you go, okay, if I put all the ingredients into the oven and I hit bake it for 350, I should get this every single time, right? Well, that's not always true when you try to produce this stuff. So sometimes you have to get very creative in how you fix things on the back end. So sometimes when these episodes don't come out till 3 or 4 in the morning, that's why.
Yeah. There's been many a nights where Andy and I are still texting at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and saying, okay, I think I'm getting ready to finally post it. Like, check your phone, make sure it's Apple, it's Spotify.
The text of it's posted, it's tweeted, I'm going to bed, I'll talk to you in the morning.
I'm a zombie.
If there's a problem, deal with it tomorrow. I'm done.
I have to be in a work meeting in 3 hours. Yeah, well, there's been quite a few of those. Yep. So yeah, I agree with you that one. Yeah, I agree that the good thing. Yeah, I certainly agree with you on that one. Obviously the biggest challenge for any podcast, regardless, is just getting the word out, and having someone give you a shot. So first you got to get people to hear about it. And that a lot of that honestly comes from you guys. Word of mouth is massive. Obviously I wear my Outlap shirt on a routine basis and I talk it up and, every chance I get. But you guys are the ones that really have driven the success of the show, telling your friends and telling your buddies and everything else and just saying, hey, there's these four idiot Americans out there talking F1. But, hey, they actually seem to know what the hell they're talking about, so maybe give them a shot. And by the way, they're pretty damn funny from time to time. you know, we get a lot of emails about that. Like, you know, we appreciate it. Like, you guys know what you're talking about, and you're entertaining to listen to. So, I mean, that warms our heart. We got one last week, even, you know, someone from the UK, you know, that was like, hey, you know, I'm all in, like, I love the show. So that those things mean the world to us. So yeah, that's probably the good. I mean, it's been crazy to obviously have the connection with you guys. You know, we all met on social media and just by chance, and now, you know, we chat every freaking day of the week, and you know, talking all kinds of stuff, even, you know, outside the world of Formula One, and just getting to know each other as humans. So that's been an awesome connection. You know, having people listen to us from, I think, I don't know, I lost count, we're in 50 different countries or something that we have listeners to. That's insane to me that someone in the middle of Africa right now is listening to my voice. I hope you're enjoying it. But it still blows my mind to even fathom that. So yeah, that's probably the good. It's incredible just the community that we built. You know, a huge, you know, the Discord's growing, and you know, it's a lot of fun, you know, conversation and good debates and things like that rage on in there, and we have a good time. And it's just that's been just awesome, just to get to know a lot of people that I otherwise would have never, ever, ever met or interacted with. And you know, through the show, you know, I've gained so many close friends and good connections that I talk with and you know, and meet with all the time. So that's been awesome. Yeah, the bad, I would say, you know, the editing piece is a beast. And obviously the time commitment, you know, it's thankfully my significant other it puts up with my crap. Because I mean, you think on a race week, you know, you're watching the race once, usually twice, spend a couple hours doing an agenda, then you gotta spend, you know, 30 minutes of prep before, an hour and a half of episode, if you know, somewhere in there. And then the editing piece, you know, Andy's tackling, you know, audio, and Deanna and I tackling, going back and forth with video. But yeah, I mean, that it can turn into hours, and sometimes what, you know, what Spotify gets is not what Apple gets, and which is makes no sense because it all comes from the same place. But, you know, Andy had to do a little surgery last week because some of the servers were getting a different version than others. Yeah. So we had to pull it down. And so we appreciate the patience there from you guys.
Pulled it down, did some surgery and figured out where the problem was and then fixed it. And then, you know, I'm texting everybody back. All right, I think I finally found it. All right, here we go. Re-upload. And then it was so much better when we did it. So and we are just when that happens, we're happy to get that feedback because it's so important that we get that feedback because, you know, we're doing the best we can to spot check an hour and a half long, or in that case, it was a 2.5 hour episode. Sometimes we miss stuff. I mean, we're human and that happens. And so when people come back and say, you know, hey, we had some audio problems with this thing, that at least lets us know. And then we can go ahead and try to fix it. So, I mean, the good thing is we're on this new platform there. It's, you have so many more options to fix now, where on our old one, you really couldn't. So we just kind of had to live with what we got. But with this, there's so much more that we can fix if there are issues. And we're learning. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, that entire exercise for me was a learning experience because I was like, well, okay, this is probably how the really, really, really good ones do it. And now I have to play in that ballpark. So that's where we're trying to get to.
Yeah. And one of the things that we're committed to and why we record, you know, on Sundays for every race is we're committed to having this thing out basically by the time the UK audience is heading into work on Monday morning, which is why we stay up till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning editing. It'd be nice to, you know, we'll do it tomorrow over lunch or whatever. No, we know you guys enjoy listening to it early in the morning on that Monday. And, you know, so thankfully we're all able to clear out schedules and make it happen. But yeah, some things, weird stuff happens at 3 o'clock in the morning with internet and all kinds of fun stuff. So sometimes we have some challenges on there, which, you know, makes me want to pull a Toto and slam a fist and break a headset.
My but... personal favorite was the power in my building going out in the middle of me doing an edit. Yeah. And me going, John, you're not going to believe this. The power is gone.
Or the tornado sirens going on.
That one too.
You're
like, all that right. Fun too.
Heading to the basement.
I'll be back in 20. So, maybe.
But no, that's a good, question. We like getting those. I think we did one a while back at like Ask Us Anything, Q&A. Yeah. I think we'll have to do another one of those soon because we always get some good stuff out of there. So no, I appreciate Peter on that one. And last one we had from Rachel Fleming. She always sends us some great stuff. So appreciate that. She said, just in case Lewis does retire, quote unquote, which he won't. I agree. He doesn't look like he will. But who, Andy, would be your first choice to replace him?
Well, I guess my answer would be, with another question, would be if we're going with the grid as is and all the contracts signed, you know, your choices are then very limited. So I think if you were Mercedes and you had to find a driver on the fly, my natural pick would be go for Nico Hülkenberg. Get out the checkbook, pay that guy. That's probably the most plug-and-play ready driver. He's driven Mercedes power units before to sit in that seat and get you through this season if you had to. If you had more opportunity to maybe do some picking and choosing, you can look kind of at the IndyCar grid and probably take your pick. Pato O'Ward, you know, he's probably raring to go and would love an F1 seat. You could go back and rehire Roman Grosjean, who would probably make that Mercedes fly pretty good, you know, with enough experience. You'd have to have somebody. You wouldn't want to start with a young driver, I don't think, because you've already got one in George Russell coming into that seat. So you want a veteran presence, someone to be kind of the point getter if you were put into that situation, because now you got to worry about scoring points.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, yeah, I think Hulkenberg is an easy one. You know, you think of like a Nick DeFries or something like that. Obviously, there's contractual things on there, but, you know, it's your team. You can do whatever the hell you want with it. So, you know, there's you can talk about like Verline, you know, is out there and had a lot of talent and, you know, could probably step in if obviously we got a Formula 2 champion again that's sitting on a couch next year. Obviously he's an Alpine Renault guy, but, you know, things, I mean, hell, we've got, Ocon is a Mercedes guy. An Alpine driver. So, you know, there's certainly things that could happen there if they had to jump in the fly. Yeah, I agree though. Hülkenberg's probably your logical bet. Pay him his absurd amount that he keeps asking for, you know, buy yourself a season. But and he's got, you know, veteran experience for George if you had to do something like that, whereas all these other guys would be, you know, you'd be taking a chance and having essentially, you know, two young guns on your team, which doesn't always play out to work out well. But yeah, if it happened, which I don't think it will, but if it happened, Mercedes of all teams could get it done, I think, pretty quickly.
Yeah, it would be
good question.
It would be a talk about, you know, having to think on your feet and quickly. I do think Lewis Hamilton will be back next year. I think you're going to have this rivalry between him and Max go on at least another couple years before it's done. And I do think, you know, again, I it took that weirdness on Sunday for me to be wrong about betting against Lewis Hamilton at your peril. Look out next year, grid. I think he's coming.
Yeah. And like I said, I said this a while back, from the moment that he signed that extension, to me that said he's got to know that they've got something good for next year. I mean, granted, it could all show up in Bahrain. It could be worth, you know, dog crap. But I think in his mind, if he thinks that car is going to be crap, or they're off, or it looks like they're missing, or things are just, you know, convobulated because they're focusing on 2021 or whatever, I don't think he signs the extension. I think he knows internally that they've got some good pieces in play and that things should be shaping up decently to be competitive next year. So yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. I know he's alluded to it. I know he's quite pissed off and rightfully so right now, but, yeah, I mean, from everything he's always said throughout his entire career, you know, he wants to do his talking on track. So he was raised, you know, I think he's going to be coming for vengeance next year. And, you know, again, doing that talking on track. So, you know, it may make for a hell of an exciting season, hopefully so.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, I think we all win. So I think that's what we all want.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so we appreciate the questions. They're always, we've got a relatively short off season, but we're planning on recording throughout most of it. Obviously we'll take a break for the next couple weeks for the holidays. But yeah, I mean, we'll be hopefully filling the airways throughout the off season. So we love these Q&As. We'll probably, you know, we'll throw out the opportunity for every time we record, we'll throw the opportunity out. If you guys have things you want us to discuss or questions or comments or whatever, we'll be happy to get it on the show. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. And I know we're going to have, there's two, I know, end of year episodes. I know we've got in the pipeline. One is kind of our year end grades for the drivers and the respective teams. And then I don't know if we'll do a separate episode, but we probably want to dig out those predictions from the beginning. I just remember that being a very funny episode, and we can all laugh at each other as to how bad we are at predicting the future. The supposed experts. But hey, John's the one with the trophy, not me. I'm the one in the basement.
Yeah, let me grab that.
There it is.
It's always keeping it close. So.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's basically it, over and out for 2021. We will be back probably after the start of the new year. So here's to you, 2021. It's been a heck of a year. I don't know if it's going out with a bang or what it's going out with. But if you are making travel plans to be with your family and loved ones for the holidays, please be safe throughout all of that. There are lots of things going around in the world around it. So we wish everybody nothing but the best, safe, happy, healthy new year. And we'll see you all in 2022. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.